And this is Coast Community Radio, KMUN and KTCB, Astoria and Kilimook, 91.9 FM and 89.5 FM, respectively. And we are swimming in the rain-swollen World Wide Web stream. And if indeed the last two issues that you heard on the previous program, if you want a little more information, the Astoria Co-op invites the public to join General Manager Matt Stanley for a GMO class and tour of the store Friday, October 24th, tomorrow, 5 to 5:30 p.m. at the corner of 14th and Exchange in Astoria. And it says, sign up in advance at the co-op. And the public is invited to Finding Common Ground on Gun Policies, a conversation with Penny Okamoto of Ceasefire Oregon and Tom O'Connor of Gun Owners for Responsible Ownership on Sunday, October 26th, this coming Sunday, 2 to 4 p.m. at the First United Methodist Church at 1076 Franklin Avenue, Astoria. This free presentation will take place in the basement social hall. Enter from 11th Street. And I suppose one other community calendar issue, which does not have to do with GMOs or gun owners. Riversong Foundation is looking for homes for several wonderful cats, aged 3 months to 8 years. Foster homes are also needed due to a large number of abandonments. You can call 503-861-2003. Well, good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. I had a couple of early seconds, so I thought those would be appropriate to read. Catch up a little bit more on some very crucial election issues this particular cycle. And I guess I'm going to add a little bit to it with an article I wrote actually a few years ago for my newspaper, the Times, North Coast Times Eagle, and have read on this program a couple of times. It might sound a little bit dated, but it's a crucial matter. You can determine what my opinion is just by what I'm reading you. And I should give the disclaimer that what I'm about to read is my opinion, and my opinion only in all the cosmos. I call it, and I wrote it, if I hadn't already said that, I call it Reefer Madness and a Prologue. Human beings love a good time. We laugh, sing, dance, make love, and go to parties. We drink, smoke, stick in our veins, and sniff up our noses, any potion that makes us feel good. Feeling good and having a good time temporarily alleviates our usual burdens of overwork, anxiety, anguish, and dread of death. We are ingenious at distilling intoxicants from flowers and weeds that grow around us, or creating artificial compounds of ephemeral nirvana. Sex is our most compelling drive. Getting high and feeling good might be considered a close second, often overlapping with the first. My drugs of choice are red wine and marijuana. One is legal, the other is not, and I have not heard a rational reason why. There is no logic that one should be benignly supported while the other makes criminals of its users and producers. My Sicilian grandfather made wine for the church, and that's a quote, during Prohibition, and kept a few bottles for himself, which could have got him arrested. But marijuana was legal then. 90-some-odd years later, I can legally drink the wine, but if I intake some bud, I am subject to jail. Does this particular reversal of laws regarding my favorite recreational drugs make any sense? Friends have been arrested and charged with growing marijuana, invaded by squads of drug busters who claim to act on telephone tips that marijuana was growing in their homes or their outdoor hemp farms spotted by helicopters. Why shouldn't they also attack grape vineyards and arrest the vintners of wine? I love wine. I believe the wheel is overrated. Discovery of the fermentation of grapes is among the greatest of human achievements. So also is the cultivation of cannabis in its infinite varieties. The wheel might have sent humanity off on its course of exploring the mechanical universe. Acidulation of grapes and harvests of cannabis have been indispensable to the exploration of intellectual and spiritual cosmos. In vino veritas, in cannabis vertigo. Next only to sex, sipping a glass of red wine and puffing on a joint are ambrosia. Yet these two superb human pleasures and expanders of intellect, and often of love, are falsely wrenched apart. The wine is stamped with public approval and cognoscenti appeal. Marijuana is stained with depravity, and its users are portrayed as irresponsible lawbreakers condemned to become addicted to heavyweight narcotics. Perhaps it is time for those who like a little smoke of euphoria or the taste of galactic brownies to speak out against these distortions of truth and the spurious injustice of laws that punish pleasure. Our ancestors, who were not allowed many pleasures either, had to wrest liberty from kings and tyrants and from powerful institutions that grew up in their place. If we do not want these hard-won liberties to go up in smoke, we had better wake up, quell our trembling, and refuse to be denied our pleasures and privacies, or we will have neither. The war on drugs, so blithely heralded, is nothing more than a cynical assault on our civil liberties by a government that would increase its power by dissolving the bonds that hold us together. Public hysteria is whipped up against a few euphoric chemicals that, like food or sex, are dangerous only when gluttony overcomes moderation. The society is infected with fear, in particular its vulnerability to crime, which is associated with drug use, instead of social conditions which produce both the obsessive consumption of drugs and the lucrative market for them. The smarmy pieties of political ayatollahs decry the use of drugs, while in classic hand-tongue duplicity, pocket payoffs to keep the trade profitable through legal oppression. The big money is the real addiction. It has made illicit bribe junkies out of the nation's lawmakers and many of its enforcers. Spacing out once in a while is not what is enervating our decaying society. Corruption, the crazy compulsive pursuit of cash and power, regardless of source and heedless of the price tag, are the historical indicators of societal decline. The pursuit of wealth by any means, fair or foul, which leaves even greater numbers of people impoverished and wrecks the productivity of a society, is the true sign of decay and decline. It is usually then, when everything starts falling apart, that large masses search for opiates to escape their crumbling lives. Overuse of anything is dangerous. Coffee, hamburgers, butter, and sugar are known killers. Alcohol not only addicts millions, it is a direct cause of the automobile fatalities of hundreds of thousands more. Alcohol also is responsible for violent behavior, even my beloved wine, that results in countless beatings and deaths of wives, children, friends, and strangers. Cigarettes kill more slowly, more certainly, but I have yet to hear a tobacco company acknowledge responsibility for the lingering, often agonizing deaths of the very people, about 400,000 a year, which is one out of six persons who die annually, who provide its wealth. Moderation is the genius of Shangri-La. Moderation in all things pleasurable, philosophical, and political. American culture is instead founded on excess. The United States, aside from its passionate addiction to money and shopping, is also the world's largest consumer of addictive chemical substances. The usual blame is placed upon a malaise of spirit of the seekers of chemically induced nirvana, not the incessant values of rapacity and greed of the society itself. Money, sex, and drugs have been the American corporate dream since the advent of hucksterism. For the dreamweavers to absolve responsibility by placing guilt on the buyers of the mesmerizing visions is pure mendacity. Drug-free America? How absurd. No more pharmaceutical compounds? Prozac banned? Prohibition once more of grape vineyards and hops fields? The arrest and conviction of tobacco farmers and their government lobbyists? You gotta be kidding. This nation consumes more drugs of infinite variety and purpose on a daily basis than the rest of the world combined. Our real problem is not the drugs we ingest or our reasons for requiring or desiring them, but our capacity for acquiescing to zealots who corrupt the public tolerance with hysterical exaggerations, proclamations, and demands that we deny our pleasures of flesh and flora. H.L. Mencken once defined Puritans as those who are disturbed that someone, somewhere, is having a good time. We allow people to have power over us who assume we are collectively as stupid and avariciously deceitful as they are. And so far, in regard to the trampling of our civil rights in the drug war, we have not shown them much reason to doubt their misconceptions. We permit these pathological simpletons to intrude their gross appetites for power upon our forms of relaxation and bliss. As a result, we are separated not only by class, gender, and race, but also by our choices of pleasure. We are separated by intimidation and edict. We are compartmentalized, broken into segments of suspicion and fear, like three-person communist cells. Instead of rallying to our friends and neighbors who are assaulted by improper police invasions of their homes and persons, we shun them in fear our own vices might also be investigated if we demonstrate support or solidarity. The war on drugs, in alliance with the war on terrorism, balkanizes us. Perhaps you have not noticed the squelching of contrary views to the war on drugs, the fearful disinclination of public protest to the government's juggernaut against civil liberties, disguised as a moral crusade against drug use. Several years ago, Oregon was almost the most progressive state regarding cultivation and personal use of marijuana. But the big guns of suppression, who kept the matter off the ballot by improperly disregarding initiative signatures several times, mounted large and expensive campaigns, not to mention ample use of hysteria and misinformation, to defeat allowing cultivation of the evil weed for personal use. The incongruous irony is that Oregon, like other states, is catastrophically afflicted by policies of transferring the remainder of the nation's wealth to those who already have most of it, which leaves the rest of the people without much, although they are expected to make up the public deficit. Oregon's salvation from the adversity can very well be the hemp agriculture that is considered the state's most abundant and lucrative crop. Tax revenues from open and legal cultivation of marijuana would catapult the state to among the richest. Instead, the controversy about how to raise money centers on sales taxes, which state voters have nixed 9 times or so far, without consideration of fully legalizing marijuana and utilizing its immense potential as a cash crop. The lack of imagination and rigid prejudices of the state's legal, political, and piety cliques not only indicate a perversity of self-flagellation, but seem unperturbed about financing state ministries and public services with such debilitating addictions as gambling, alcohol, and tobacco revenues. Thousands of Oregonians are criminals only because they prefer marijuana to the legally sanctioned abuse of alcohol. And as a result, their freedoms and personal lives are in jeopardy simply because they enjoy the celestial hemp more than, or alongside, the intemperance of whiskey or wine. The repressive atmosphere surrounding the right to choose one's own poison has stifled open public debate crucial to honestly discuss marijuana and its effects upon individuals and society. Dr. Frederick Oerther, long a strong voice for legalizing marijuana and once a candidate for governor of Oregon, said when arrested for cultivating marijuana for his personal use, "I see a light at the end of the tunnel, and it is the Bill of Rights burning." And that was Reefer Madness. And I wrote it. I'm not even sure if Frederick Oerther is still alive. If he were, I certainly wish he were candidate for governor, rather than the candidates we do have this election. Well, I would like to continue this particular subject with something that I ran in the North Coast Times Eagle a few years back. It's called "A Word from the Enemy" by members of the Cannabis Cannibals. It starts with a quote by Brian Inglis. "To punish drug takers is like a drunk striking the bleary face he sees in the mirror. Drugs will not be brought under control until society itself changes, allowing people to use them as primitive man did, welcoming the visions they provided, not as fantasies, but as intimations of a different and important level of reality." A Word from the Enemy by the Cannabis Cannibals. The purpose of this article is to put an end to the current method of fighting the war on drugs. In this war, neither side may claim victory or defeat. Victory over the actions of individuals may only be accomplished by individual action. Some may refuse to consider the ideas in this article due to the belief that the consideration of seemingly repugnant ideas is dangerous. The consideration of different ideas leads to knowledge, and knowledge in and of itself is not dangerous. If a solution to a problem is generally ineffective, ignorance of the total solution to that problem should not imply that the present attempt at solution is the only proper and just choice of action. The current method of fighting the drug war is caused by the fact that not only a minority of the population has ever tried the drugs that are so valiantly fought against, medical knowledge of improper actions, in this case abuse of drugs, should not justify the criminalizing of adult behavior. Many will not agree that the current drug laws need to be changed. Those who say this have in all likelihood never ingested an illegal drug, and many have only witnessed the tragedy of an individual unable to control the effect of their own actions. But many do not believe such an individual is a criminal, but rather has a physical, psychological, or spiritual problem. The authors of this article are criminals. They use marijuana and may on occasion use other pleasure-inducing drugs. This article is not intended as an advocacy of breaking laws in general. The theft of electricity or other materials in the production of recreational drugs should remain a crime. The offering of recreational drugs to children should remain a crime. The abuse of any material substance should remain morally indefensible. The breaking of any other law is not justified by the current unjustness of the legal unavailability of these drugs. The authors of this article are anonymous. Some may believe that if one has strong moral conviction that an action is correct, there is the implication that personal identity should not be important and should in fact be acknowledged so that others will also become convinced. Unfortunately, the current law in respect to pleasure drugs precludes this assumption. The authors believe that if their identity were to become known, many unjust actions would be taken against them. Their houses may be searched for contraband. They may be ostracized by those with different beliefs. Some may warn children away from them, as they will be known as lawbreakers. They may be detained to keep from spreading their beliefs or jailed in the belief it will help their problem. Their property may be damaged by those who violently disagree with them. They may even come to great physical harm. All this due to the expression of their beliefs. If a country values the freedom of speech, this is a dangerous state of affairs. If a country values liberty, this is an extremely unfortunate occurrence. If a country values freedom, this should be an affront to all its citizens. Is the desire to protect one's family and friends from perceived harm sufficient cause to label those actions that pose no direct threat to one's own interests as criminal? When a sane, rational, law-abiding adult commits any action, it is usually done with the knowledge that the overall effect of the act will cause no harm to the individual's interests or to society as a whole. Where there is disagreement on the perceived repercussions of an act, and often where there is not, laws are crafted to dissuade those who may harm society or its members. Rock climbing, cave exploring, and skydiving are all legal, morally acceptable activities. It is well known that they are also very dangerous. Society has recognized that an individual may endanger his or her life, so long as these acts do not threaten others or society. Is the threat from the adult use of recreational drugs a definite harm to society? The pleasant effects of an intoxicant on an individual can range from mild euphoria to total incapacitation. This is a wide range of possible harm. The desire to experience pleasure is an undeniable human need. Is the inability of someone to control a specific act, such as alcohol or drug use, sufficient cause to deny legality to all such acts? It is illegal to masturbate in public. Many believe that masturbation is an unnatural, unclean act of self-degradation, yet it remains privately legal. A law forbidding masturbation in private would most likely be ignored by those with a desire to masturbate. If the majority of a country strongly believe masturbation to be wrong and pass a law that bans that act, those who continue to desire masturbating might be considered as thinking criminal thoughts. The difference is the ability of the individual to control him or herself, and no human action other than complete and total observation, the feared big brother of government, can stop a member of that minority from committing the act of masturbation. The desire to control the behavior of others is a strong human tendency. The inability of some to be able to have direct control over the actions of family and friends has led, indirectly, to the current strategy. It seems to be the fear that if these drugs were legally available, one's way of life or that of family and friends would be destroyed that has kept these drugs legally unavailable in any form for personal use. The desire of parents to retain some form of control over the actions of their children is very strong. Many parents believe they have personally failed if their child develops some type of problem. Any parent who's forced to endure a drug problem child, and that's in quotes, will only have their belief in the innate wrongness of pleasure-inducing drugs strengthened. Some of us who have personally experienced a drug problem have learned the lesson of self-control along with the corresponding lesson of our inability to directly control the actions of others. Many laws are passed that seek to control the behavior of others. The most striking example of this is the United States federal income tax laws. These laws are constantly changed in order to affect the economic activity of this country's citizens. The use of a financial incentive is a very effective way to control behavior. The war on drugs has increased the financial cost of those drugs and has thereby channeled economic benefit to those who break drug laws, whether by illegal distribution or unlawful manufacture. This fosters the immoral encouragement, especially of minors, in the use of drugs. No economic benefit is given to the drug user, and in fact the cost continues to escalate. A total and absolute ban by government of drug use encourages many to seek the financial rewards of unlawful behavior. At what price do humans behave themselves? Recreational drugs are big business. All big businesses need careful regulation to minimize the social harm from those endeavors. An end to the war on drugs can only come about by the realization that a government monopoly, at least initially, will sufficiently reduce the financial incentives the trade in illegal drugs currently offers. The manufacturing, pricing, and distribution of substances that cause pleasure must be tightly licensed, regulated, and controlled. This will put an end to corner, and that's a quote, drug dealers who encourage all ages to purchase drugs. It will allow for rational solutions for those with substance abuse problems, and it will allow those who choose to use drugs currently illegal the ability to view themselves as non-criminals. We do not want our descendants to still be caught up in the war on drugs. We do know they, like every other person, will have to learn control of their own behavior. Work must be done toward the enlightenment of every individual in terms of responsibility for their own actions and the effects they have on others and society. We hope for the understanding that a fear of the majority should not be cause for the continuing criminalization of the actions of a minority. We are not immoral people. We will fight for our freedom to make decisions that are of no concern to others. We will make our peace with God and humanity as we see fit. We will teach our children well. And that was a word from the enemy by members of the Cannabis Cannibals. And a further article by the Cannabis Cannibals, an undeveloped argument. The authors of this article used to find it very easy to argue against the actions of terrorists around the world. Recently, however, we have been contemplating what some would consider terrorist acts. This is very frightening to us, as such actions threaten our peace. We would not intend the death of any person. We would intend to hurt only the economic interests of those who are opposed to our beliefs. This would, of course, cause harm to those with whom we have no quarrel other than their obedience to unjust laws. All liquor stores and processing plants must be destroyed. The general public must live in fear of purchasing alcoholic beverages. Deliveries of beer and wine must be disrupted. Bars and taverns that stand in open opposition to a change in drug laws will experience monkey wrenching. Churches will no longer serve wine for communion. Any alcohol supplies reaching distribution centers must be contaminated with an innocuous substance that causes great physical discomfort. No member of the public shall enjoy the use of alcohol until we are allowed to legally use the substance of our choice. All tobacco stores, processing plants, and fields of harvest must be destroyed. Tobacco deliveries must be disrupted. Places of commerce that distribute tobacco will be unable to conduct normal business. No exportation of tobacco will be permitted. No member of the public shall be allowed to begin use of or further their addiction to nicotine until we are allowed to legally use the substance of our choice. Importation of coffee beans and herbs used in making tea will be halted. Domestic production will be upset and distribution will not occur. The attempt to sell these beverages will be met with swift retaliation. No member of the public will have the ability to peacefully enjoy their morning cup of joe until we are allowed to legally use the substance of our choice. The distribution of any drugs not directly affecting the preservation of life must be disrupted. The flu, common colds, headaches, constipation, athlete's feet, and all other common maladies will be forced into continuance without palliative drugs until we are allowed to legally use the substance of our choice. Marijuana seed will be planted everywhere. No place shall be immune. Schoolyards, police station gardens, courthouse squares, your own garden at home. It grows like a weed and it spreads like a weed. Seed will be mixed with other flower and vegetable seeds at all places that sell horticultural supplies. Parks and forests will choke from an overabundance of this weed. This will not stop until the plant species, Cannabis sativa, has spread beyond control and extinction. Will any of these actions been taken? Not by these authors at this point in time. Others have taken some of these actions with little effect. Only a large, well-planned, highly organized terror campaign of this sort would succeed, and it might be very bloody. Peaceful actions that lead to peaceful change are always desirable to actions that may harm those who are blameless. But social injustice sometimes requires the use of distasteful methods. We will remain patient a short while longer. We have great patience, but our patience is not limitless. Our voices will not be silenced by our death or imprisonment. We will teach our children of the injustice of government and the cruelty of the majority. We will become a lonely people, and many will pray for our destruction. We will fight this war that has been made on our free choice to its very end, however long it takes. The war has been declared, and we accept the battle. And that was An Undeveloped Argument by the Cannabis Cannibals, who also wrote This Greed, A Word from the Enemy. And a poem by D. Bogan, Johnny Potsy, Psalm 104:14. He causeth the grass for the cattle, and herb for the service of man. Plant that herb, spread that seed, compassion and sense is what we need. Cultivate cannabis far and wide, out in the private countryside, not near roads or in ditches. Make them spend money, that money, those sons of bitches. The war on drugs will be waged with peace. They spend our billions, we plant our seeds. When the world returns to happier times, we'll charge them all with their heinous crimes. And that was Johnny Potseed by D. Bogan. And this has been Michael McCusker on this variable day with right now a nice dash of sunlight outside the studio window here at KMUN. I suppose I will be around next Thursday if certain things do not occur, such as a drone striking me on the street, or my falling into the river, or being hit by an automobile in now finally marked crosswalks in the city of Astoria. This is KMUN and KTCV, Astoria, Kitimat, 91.9 FM and 89.5 FM. Next up, folk music with Susie, who just drove in right after the news.